Hello, this is Lonnie Stark of Stark Silver Creek, and welcome to another edition of Wine Tales, where we profile the stories, people, and places and vines of wine country. Today is January 23rd, 2009, and I have Massimo from Ehlers Estate. He's the winemaker there, and I now want to welcome Massimo. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just to start off, I think our listeners would be interested if you could tell us a little about yourself and how you got started in the wine industry.
Sure, yeah. Well, I grew up in Berkeley, California. I was born and raised there. My father's Italian and mother American, and I grew up in a very Italian home. There was a lot of, you know, cooking and a lot of focus on, you know, on food and wine. And so, you know, I always had that kind of background, definitely the culture of wine. And actually, I randomly ended up at UC Davis, which is not too far away. And, you know, I was one of, you know, many lost college kids trying to figure out what, you know, he wants to do with the rest of his life. You know, it was a big challenge. So I actually ended up about a year and a half into college, I ended up taking Introduction to Winemaking, and yeah, it was kind of, I kind of fell in love. I got an A plus, and the first A plus I've, you know, had ever gotten in my life. And so I certainly knew that I was interested, and so yeah, that summer I began taking chemistry courses, and that's kind of where that journey began.
So how did other people react? Did you come out and announce you were going to become a winemaker, or did you just quietly take courses in different areas and just try to find a way into the wine industry?
Sure. Well, my grandfather was an economics professor at UC Berkeley, and so I decided I'll be an economics major because I didn't know what else to be, and so started taking took a whole, you know, range of courses, economics and international relations, Italian, and and I was definitely going, you know, I was then kind of midway through, you know, my first year, I was like, oh, I'll go kind of the business route and kind of went towards that, and I remember taking accounting, and, you know, it was pretty good, but I just hated it and could not imagine myself, you know, having a desk job and, you know, just doing that. And so I was like, okay, I need to find something else. So that's when I decided to, you know, the introduction class had always kind of caught my eye, but I had never really, you know, given it a shot. So yeah, that's when I did that. And yeah, definitely found my passion.
So you started off with a winemaking class, so I'm sure that gave you some strong sort of realities of what it's like to be a winemaker. But I think with all the movies out there, there's really a romantic sort of notion of what it is to be a winemaker. Can you sort of dispel some of those myths, but also give us some insight into some of the, you know, maybe less known joys of winemaking?
Yeah, sure. We'll start with some of the myths. You know, it's definitely the one in particular is, you know, are the early morning tastings, you know, 8 a.m. at the winery. And, you know, I always talk to my friends, and they're almost jealous that I think I'm drinking, you know, on the job at 8 a.m. And it's definitely not the case. I mean, it's pretty, focused work, and, you know, it's cumbersome sometimes when you have to taste so many samples that early in the morning. But it's important because that's when your palate is really at its peak and freshest, so it's important to do it at that time. And also, people forget how labor-intensive winemaking is in general, and that you do have, you know, there's a lot of hands-on work in the winery, in the vineyard, and then really, you know, then taking care of the wine. The seasonality of the job, that's something that sometimes people have troubles with. You have 3 intense months of work, and that can be taxing as well. But you know, for people like me, it's the fun time. That's really when the wine is made, and it's very important for the overall stability of the wine as well. I'd say some of the perks of the job are definitely going out and what I like, I call them educational trips out to wineries or wine regions. Those are a lot of fun, and that's definitely a nice perk. But also, just also lunches and socializing, meeting people, and really just having people try your wine. And I mean, that's the great part of the job, is that creative aspect, and it's rewarding to create a wine that people put on their table. I mean, that's an amazing thing that I take a lot of pride in. So yeah, those are a few of the perks,
Yeah,
few of the
I
many.
feel the many. Yeah, I know what you mean in terms of at least bringing home special bottles of wine and having it. It's not just only the wine, but also I think the memories around it with your with your family and friends. So I think that's you bring up a great point.
Yeah, and that's what wine is for. It's to help, the meal shouldn't be just about the wine. I mean, wine is there to help facilitate the meal and friendship and family. That's what really wine is about. And hopefully that it's enjoyable with what you're eating. There's even a, you know, even a, I've had plenty of okay wines that taste a lot better when I'm, surrounded with, a great group of people. It makes a big difference.
One thing that is, I think, unique about Eller's is that its business model is a little different in that all the proceeds go to a charity. Can you tell us a little about that? And do you think it impacts the way the wineries run overall? Or do you think it has no effect other than the proceeds go to a charity?
Right. Well, no, I definitely want to, mention that Eller's, our focus is making great wine, and that's definitely our number one concern. But we are very fortunate to be held in trust by the Le Duc Foundation, which is a French charitable foundation, and they donate about $20 to $30 million a year to cardiovascular research. It's actually a very important charitable foundation in the world, and we are held in trust by them. The owner, Jean Leduc, who founded the foundation and started Eller's, he suffered from heart disease, and hence the creation of this foundation. And Eller's was, was very dear to his heart, and he definitely wanted to make it an asset of the foundation, and that's where we are today. So we are not for profit, and all the profit we do make ends up going back to the Le Duc Foundation and back to cardiovascular research, which is, it's an amazing thing. It's a great privilege and honor to be able to work at a place like that. You definitely feel, there's a sense that, every dollar we make or every dollar we save, can help, help somebody. It's great. And yeah, I think the way we run, like any business, you have to, with expenses and things like that, and you always have to be careful and what you spend. And so, it's always on our mind that, what we spend, could go to help somebody. So it's always in the back of our mind. But saying that, we are a winery, and we have to make great wine, and we have to definitely spend some money to do that. So yeah, it's an amazing opportunity to work at a place that is not for profit, and this is such a great, a great thing. So yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, I think also the person that started the Eller's was also a great fan of wine as well. So I think you pair it off quite well, saying that it's first and foremost to produce great wines, but isn't it wonderful that the proceeds from that effort actually then go and benefit something such as cardiovascular research? For those of you that don't know, I thought one of the interesting things about the Eller's logo was the E, that you actually have the heart in the space where the E sort of closes around. So that I thought that was interesting, and I think I read something about that, but I never noticed it until it was brought to my attention. So I think it's
Yeah,
great.
some people notice it right away, but definitely for me, it took me a second
I was
to
one of the
figure it out
slow
as well.
ones.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, they always ask if their wine purchase is tax deductible, which unfortunately it's not, but that would be great if it were. But I think that it definitely reassures them that they feel like they're doing something good for themselves and good for other people, so it's nice.
So I was surprised to learn that you were actually native to California. I was able to read your bio, and it seemed that you made wines in South Africa and then Tuscany, which when I read that, I was like so jealous. And
Yeah,
now in
certainly.
Napa. So how did you end up in South Africa making wine first and foremost? And do you find the winemaking process to be different across those three regions?
Well, definitely, let me start back a little bit. Definitely, when I was in college, finishing up my degree, I definitely wanted to go to Italy and work, and that's how I got to Tuscany. I received a scholarship from UC Davis. Each year, one student gets a scholarship to go to work for Antinori at their Tignanello estate, which is their super Tuscan estate, right outside of Florence, right in the heart of the Chianti Classico region.
Beautiful.
And so that's where I started out there, and it was just a great first opportunity to just get my hands dirty. I was in the cellar. The cellar rat, if you will, and in charge of pump overs, and it was just a great time, and have a lot of great memories from there. I was living in the villa, right there on the property, just a quick walk to the cellar, and then I came back to California after spending a little bit more time in Florence, some personal time. And then, I came and worked at Provenance, so back in California, and got a little more focus in the lab there. And they offered me a position, but I still had the travel bug, and when I decided to go to South Africa. And the reason why I went to South Africa, I was deciding between New Zealand, Australia, or South Africa, and South Africa really felt like a place I might not go if it weren't for work. So that was one of my main reasons for going there. And
That must have been a tough choice, Australia, New Zealand, and South
it's
Africa.
funny though, I had asked one of my friends, actually a woman winemaker who I went to school with, and she had been to both places and was really fell in love with South Africa, and she told me that the South African women were much more beautiful than the New Zealand women, so
That sealed the deal, huh?
that sealed the deal. So I bought a ticket the next day to South Africa.
So was she right?
Well, it's true, they are beautiful. I've never been to New Zealand, so I can't compare, but I was impressed. And but no, South Africa, all joking aside, South Africa was a great place, and it's really where kind of wine clicked for me, I suppose. And really a place where I learned work ethic, and I mean, they worked me to death basically, and I lost 20 pounds
Wow.
in 3 months, and rarely had a break, and so it was interesting. It was a big change, and wine clicked for me down there. Just kind of everything you learn, it just kind of all comes together with kind of real world practices. And I guess I learned, had a better feel for fermentation, and kind of got inside the yeast head, and kind of figured out what he needs throughout that whole time. And it was a great experience. And with these experiences, there's definitely the winemaking side, but then there's also the cultural aspect, and that's huge. To be able to work and live with South Africans. That was an amazing opportunity, and I'm really thankful for that, and have a lot of great friends down there, and wherever I've traveled, really, which is nice.
So you talked about South Africa, Tuscany. It seemed that you also worked a little while at Screaming Eagle, and I just have to ask because I know our listeners are going to be interested in this. How was it working at Screaming Eagle?
Yeah, it was an amazing opportunity. I was there for 2.5 years for the 06 and 07 vintage as the assistant winemaker. And yeah, I was really at Screaming Eagle at a huge time of change. Obviously, Gene Phillips had sold the property to the new owners who were my bosses. And so we started replanting vineyard and building a new winery it's just a very magical place. There's something about the property when you're there. I don't know, it just gives you some other sensation, and there's something, you feel it when you're there walking the property, and there's something special about it. And some great memories. And but for me it was really time to take that next step to winemaker. And focus, I guess, on my career and more challenges. As the assistant, I was very hands-on, which was great, doing all the work. And but after a while, you gotta, there's so much more to being a winemaker than just actually being hands-on with the wine. So I guess that's what I wanted. I want all the rest of the challenges. And I actually wanted people to drink my wine because those people don't drink their allotment of Screaming Eagle. So. It was great, I'm dear friends with the vineyard foreman. He's like a brother to me, and his little son calls me Tio Massimo, Uncle Massimo. And so I have very fond memories, and there's a small place in my heart for Screaming Eagle. So it was a great experience, and it's also great to be here at Eller's, another small, estate property, that's really what I enjoy. And so I kind of bring that experience from Screaming Eagle, and definitely able to, I think, transfer it, over here. So.
So speaking of Eller's, now that you're the winemaker at Eller's, what do you see as the Eller's approach to winemaking, and what do you think over the next while that you're the winemaker, what do you think is your style and approach to the wines that are going to be coming out of Eller's?
Sure. Well, I do want to clarify that I'm the winemaker, and then there is Philippe Melka, who is consulting for Eller's Estate as well. So we've kind of been paired up to team the winemaking here, which is great, and he's a great guy to work with. But the style, I think, well, one for us, it's really to get back in the vineyard, and we'll make a few changes just from some cultivation practices to try to step up the viticulture a bit and really get the vines healthy and producing great fruit. And then for us, as style is concerned, I would definitely look for a little bit softer wine, probably a little more fruit forward. Really just trying to maintain the purity that comes from the vineyard, and not trying to adulterate that too much. As for me, winemaking is really, I start with 100% coming from the vineyard, and I don't want to do too much to it to ruin that. I want to keep it pure. So I think people will find very approachable wines from this great site. I mean, I've been very impressed with the fruit that I've been able to work with for the 2008 vintage, and I think 2009. With all these, small but important changes that we're making, I think we'll make all the difference in the world. And it's a great opportunity to be here on a 40-acre estate in St. Helena Appellation, and with some great neighbors and great soils. And it's kind of a winemaker's dream.
So you talked about the purity of the fruit that comes from the vineyard and trying not to adulterate too much in the final product. How do you feel about the different varieties of wine out there that's pure, 100% Cabernet versus the Bordeaux style or the blends or the proprietary reds?
Sure. Well, I'm personally more a fan of blending. I feel like I feel like definitely you can improve on a wine with blending, and which as a winemaker, that's really what you want to achieve. I think for me coming here, I'm definitely, I'll propose some changes, and if there's positive feedback, then that's great, and maybe we'll go ahead with doing that. But for me, I don't know. For me, it's just you can just make more interesting wines and more balanced wines, I feel, by blending. So yeah, that's I think it's very important, and definitely, I think with my generation of winemakers, you definitely see people kind of going back to blending. I mean, you're always blending, but maybe not blending, a handful of different varietals. And I know Philippe, feels the same way about blending as well. To make, I think we'd be able to show off Eller's estate even better by blending. So that'll be my proposal to them, as the new winemaker here.
I've seen actually quite a bit more. I mean, blending's obviously something that isn't new in Europe, but here I've noticed just a rise in the trend, and not only of blending, but the status of the wines that come from making them a blend. And it was interesting what you brought up is the same thing that we heard from Sarah out in Paju from our first podcast, talking about
Okay.
how she really enjoys blending because you're able to make certain wines even better by bringing in other elements from other varietals.
Yeah, I mean, that's what people want. They want a great wine. And so if you're not going to give them that, or if you could give them a better wine, I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, that's what I want to drink, is better wine. So I think the consumer is the same way. I think there's a bit, I think, being, varietally labeled Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot, it definitely was fashionable, and I think the consumer is becoming a little bit more aware and smarter, and I think they're more willing to try cab-based blends or things of that nature, and not be too scared. So I think I think in the future, I think that's definitely a route that most winemakers want to take. So I think for me it's great. So I'm definitely all for it.
Speaking about the public and what the public wants, I did notice one, I think, quite unusual thing on your website, which is actually a form that people can fill out to ask you questions. So I want to know what were some of the things people have been asking you about, as well as what's the most unusual or outlandish thing that anyone's asked you through that web form?
Well, I can start with the outlandish. I mean, I've definitely been asked on a few dates by some ladies, and so that's been a nice, I guess, a nice perk of being a winemaker. But I usually get more technical questions. What is malolactic fermentation, and just it's more about the winemaking process, I guess. And then also there's some vineyard questions as well that people come up with. So, I think it's a great way to, help educate, our consumers, if they have a question. And, I'm more than willing to answer any of those, especially now since it's the slow season. So, please, everyone shoot them my way. I definitely, it's fun, and I wish, more wineries would do that. Because, it's important to have a consumer
Who's connected?
who's interested and connected, with the winemaker or with the winery. I mean, that's all important, those relationships. And I mean, it's a great little perk that they have as well. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I definitely enjoy, coming in and scrolling through those questions. It's great fun. So.
That's fabulous, and it's fun that you shared that little tidbit with us. I think now we're
Yeah,
gonna
it's not for
have
everybody, not just for you
now we're gonna
guys.
have the exodus to South Africa, and everyone's there'll be massive sign-ups for winemaking 101 at colleges
Yeah,
because
great. Massimo for president.
of you.
Right.
So you
So
mentioned right
funny.
now it's a slow season, or are you busy with anything at Eller's right now?
Yeah, actually, we are keeping busy at the moment. Just finished the budget season, which is always great, and that's exciting. But
Especially right now,
no, that went
yes.
smooth, went relatively smooth. So actually, right now we are actually the last few days we've been racking the 2008. So after the wine goes through malolactic fermentation in barrel, we'll basically take the clean wine out, clean the barrels of sediment, and make any sulfur adjustments to the wine that we need, and then return them to barrel and then put them back for aging. So that's one of the main things we're doing right now is cleaning up the 2008s, which are tasting great, and we're also focused on blending the 2007 wine. So talk about blends. That's what Philippe, Melka, and myself are doing right now. We'll meet, once or twice a week to we'll taste through the 07s and then work on potential blends and set those aside, revisit, and talk about blending then in the winery.
Well,
So
speaking of
that's also going on. And in the vineyard, we're pre-pruning, so starting pruning and keeping the guys busy out there when it's not raining. So.
yeah, actually, I just remembered talking about blends. You are releasing every year just a special blend that's created just for that year for the wine club members, right?
Yeah, definitely. I know I didn't blend the obviously it's Rudy's doing the blending before, but yeah, it's a special blend that we do. I know he did. I think it was the I know the 06 was mostly a good chunk of Petit Verdot, so a nice influence from that the other wines don't see. So it's more of a fun wine, try to make an approachable wine that. People, yeah, something, just a small reward for our wine club members, and that's a, it's a, it's a lot of fun, and not a wine that a lot of people get to taste besides you guys. So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's definitely fun for a winemaker to make it for a small audience that's really passionate about Ehlers as well. So it's definitely always in the back of my mind when blending.
So throughout this interview, you've brought up a lot of technical terms around making of the wine, and I think there's definitely an element of the chemistry and the science, but also I think that there's also subjectivity, right? The art. And as you look to
Definitely.
develop yourself as a winemaker, what's that balance of how much time you focus on learning the techniques and how much time you focus on the heart or the art of winemaking?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think your palate it's always evolving, and I definitely like certain wines. So, I'll make wines in the style that I enjoy drinking, where other winemakers, they have their own style. But I know definitely, I do, I have a tasting group every Monday that I do with about 18 other people, and it's actually a really big group. And so it's a great way to taste a lot of different wines and get a lot of different feedback from all the different people. And we rank wines, and it's a lot of fun. And but for me, it's just an ongoing thing. I mean, even working in a winery, you definitely get a house palate, get used to the wines you make. So for me, when I love going abroad, to Europe, start drinking French wines or Spanish wines or Italian wines, and when I come back to California, it's like my palate's changed. I become accustomed to those. That style of wine, and it makes me rethink what I'm doing and the style of wine that I'm making. So that definitely keeps it interesting, and I guess it just makes me think differently and keeps it challenging. Technically, from a winemaking standpoint, I'm involved in technical winemaking groups. And but a lot of it is talking to friends about what they're doing, visiting other wineries, always trying to improve your winery, the tools you have to make wine. For me, I definitely have that perfectionist quality, and I think a lot of winemakers do as well, where, they're almost never happy. They want to just be better and better and better, and I think it's great for the wine, not always the winemaker, but no, it's I think that's to answer those two questions, definitely, yeah, that's how I see it.
So is there a particular part that you're focused on now, or is it just a balanced approach across both? Is there, a certain thing that you're like, geez, I want to improve on that,
Sure. Well, for me, being at Eller's, there's the whole biodynamic side, and that's new to me. So I'm really, I have a stack of papers and books at home, trying to kind of take that all in and really understand the philosophy behind it, and also working with Philippe Armignier, who's our biodynamic consultant as well, to work with him and kind of see the world through his eyes, and yeah, so that's something where I'm focused on. Yeah, and each year I usually try to pick something for myself or several topics of of interest that I'd like to learn more about, and that's definitely one of them. So it's a great opportunity to be somewhere where they do biodynamic farming and be able to really be in the thick of it as well. That's really where you learn the most. So yeah, I'm happy to be learning about that as well.
So it sounds like winemaking and everything around it keeps you quite busy. So in the very little time that you probably have outside of winemaking, what do you do for fun around Napa?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I always get that question, what do you do for fun? And I'm like, well, winemaking. That's never sufficient. But yeah, I enjoy cooking and having friends over for lunches or dinners, and that's kind of the way I grew up, kind of that Italian hospitality, and just getting people together. I really enjoy that. I do a little bit of mushroom hunting around the place, and no shark cage diving anymore. Those days are over.
You did shark cage diving for a while?
I did for a while, but yeah, I just bum knee, so no, I'm just kidding. No, I just, I enjoy everything that a, 28-year-old guy enjoys. So, yeah, just getting together with friends and, enjoying the weekend. I go down to Berkeley quite a bit, or the city, which is really nice. It's really close, so I have some great friends there, and yeah, just enjoy food and people and life. I mean, it's really, yeah. So that's kind of Boston in a nutshell. A lot of wine, and I try to find the balance of everything, so in
Not a bad
wine and in
life.
life. So
Not a bad
yeah,
life.
it's a lot of fun, and it's great to be in the valley. I mean, it's a small place, but I definitely enjoy going to the Sunshine Market in Salina and bumping into all these people that I know. It's nice, and I'm not used to that, so it's been a great change, and yeah, some really great people up here who know how to live life really well, and yeah, it's kind of infectious, which is a good thing.
Thank you so much for the time you've taken with us. You brought, you talked a lot about the wines you make and
No, it was really a pleasure, and it was great to meet you guys when you came up here. You two were definitely the liveliest of all the wine club members. I definitely remember that. And no, it was a lot of fun. And no, it's great to share a little bit of my life and what I do here at Eller's with the rest of the people out there. And yeah, I think it's really a pleasure to be at Eller's and to meet great people like you guys. That's what it's all about.
Well,
And
thank
wine
you.
and good times and good friends, and that's a huge part of life. So I'm happy to help facilitate all that.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and it's always nice. I mean, we enjoy your wines, but it's always nice to talk to the winemaker and just feel, as you were saying, just so much more connected to the wines that you drink and the experiences that you have around. So, definitely want to thank you for your time, and we'll just try to look you up next time we're at Eller's, and hopefully you're not too busily shoveling the grapes.
But yeah, never know. You never know.
Thanks.
Well, yeah, please come back soon, and yeah, definitely we'll do some barrel tasting when you guys come back.
Sounds good. I'm now here with Maria Rowe, who is the wine club manager for Eller's Estate. Hi, welcome, Maria.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time out. I did want to ask you a little about the wine club and what's involved in that, and also what are the sort of events that are coming up in 2009?
Absolutely. The wine club is very new, actually. It was started in about end of 2006, so technically we only had three shipments so far. And it's a very unique club in which there's only one shipment per year and two level of memberships. One level is a six-pack per year, and the other level is a three-case club per year. And the unique part about the club is basically we do offer a wholesale discount, which is 30% off on any additional purchases throughout the year. And one other interesting benefit for the upper-level club is that they do have access to our guest house on the property. It's a three-bedroom, three-bath guest house. And so this is technically their home away from home, and it's only open to those members for them to come and spend weekends and a few nights here.
Great. It's also quite an exclusive club as well, in the sense that there's only a certain number of members that you can join, and it's capped off, correct?
That's correct, Lonnie. Because we are a small estate winery, the wine allocation gets a little tight, and so the higher member club, higher member level ship is to the three-case one is only for 100 members, and the six-pack club is only for 500 members.
Great. And for 2009, we had a lot of fun, and we wrote you a note about this too at the last harvest party, and it was just a great event. Wanted to know, 2009, what do wine club members have to look forward to?
Thank you. The 2009, we are going to do again the paella party, and we're also planning on doing a full-blown release party for club members, and those will be the two events for them.
Wanted to thank you for taking the time to spend with us, and we really enjoy Eller's Estate. The first time I remember we visited your winery, just felt it was a really nice, cozy place and really unique, model in that all the proceeds go to charity and great wines, and of course the most beautiful bottle in Napa in terms of bottle design, the 1886. It's my personal favorite, and I've talked about this on the blog as well, that it's the most beautiful bottle in Napa as well.
Thank you, both Lonnie and Clint. You guys have been great for us and been a great support for us. We are very small, and we do make handcrafted wines, and there is a lot about the property that we want to share out with the world. For one, it's a very historical property that was built in 1886, and the philanthropy about the winery is something very unique as well. And we do depend on word of mouth, because technically we would not be able to spend, $200,000 in advertising out there if we are donating all to heart disease. So it's the more people know and come to the property and enjoy it, that's what we want to share.
Thank you so much, Maria, for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for inviting us to do this.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Wine Tales, where we profile the stories, people, places, and vines of wine country. For other Wine Tales episodes, please visit starksilvercreek.com or search for Wine Tales on iTunes. This is Lonnie Stark of Stark Silver Creek. Thank you for joining us.